Brave New World.
Hello, welcome to Brave New World programme. My name is John Harrison. Samuel Johnson, that well-known London diarist, writer and critic, wrote, "When a man is tired of London, he is tired of life." How true. The only thing is that Samuel Johnson died in 1784. Now, what about today? Question is, could London be finally losing its people and its soul? To discuss this issue, I welcome to the programme Deputy Research Director of the Institute of Economic Affairs in London, Dr. Richard Wellings. Welcome to the programme, Richard.
Thank you very much, John.
Now, it's quite a dramatic statement of mine there. You know, could London be finally losing its people and its soul? But I do know that London is shedding a lot of people at the same time as gaining other people. And I fear that some of the people that it's shedding are people with higher education, with sort of professional jobs, but who just cannot afford to live in London anymore. Could you please elucidate us on the overall picture as far as that's concerned?
Yes, I think that's correct. What we're seeing is, if you like, a squeezed middle who find it really difficult to afford an acceptable standard of housing in London.
Yeah.
And that's primarily the result of very restrictive planning controls, which mean not enough housing is being built in the context of an overall rising population. So sort of wealthy people can afford to live there, and poorer people can as well, because they're getting support via the welfare state. They're perhaps in social housing and paying a subsidised rent, but the middle are being squeezed out. And often the middle are people who've lived in London for a very long time, often, you know, the traditional Cockney, respectful working class types who gave the city a lot of character.
Yeah, and not only character, but also all the guilds in the old days. You know, I mean, the City of London, one is extremely powerful, not only because it was a trading centre, but also because of its guilds. And the guilds were made up of masters, you know, of technicians and workshops, and people who knew what they're doing could use their hands. Now, that's all gone a long time ago, isn't it?
Well, I mean, a lot of those, the tradespeople have moved out to regions like Essex, so and you can see them making very long commutes every day, which isn't ideal, which of course means they have to charge higher costs as well to their clients. So it's really a pretty big negative. But once again, it goes back to the housing market and the lack of new build, and also things like the Green Belt that have stopped the city expanding its footprint despite the rising population.
Yeah. The transfer from agricultural and, I suppose, old ex-industrial land to residential land, that's a question, isn't it? And that's something that's very difficult to do in London and around London.
Well, I mean, the problem is a lot of this brownfield land is very, very expensive to decontaminate. So I believe the bill for the Olympic site, which is such an enormous area, roughly maybe one square mile, was around £1 billion just to clean up the land.
Yeah.
And that's a massive problem. Often these brownfield sites aren't in very nice locations as well. They're often in floodplains because obviously that's where the industry was built, along the rivers and canals, which means they obviously go against government policy to redevelop them. But so the big problems there. It's much cheaper to develop greenfield site just on the edge of the city, maybe next to railways, but that's prohibited by policy.
Yeah. Yeah, but what about the ecological concerns of people living in the Greenbelt areas or on the edge of the Greenbelt areas? You know, suddenly going, ah, no, you don't cut down the trees. What about all the green people, you know, the ecological activists who are going to freak out or do freak out when a single tree is cut down in the Greenbelt areas?
Well, it's a bit of a myth that all the Greenbelt's beautiful countryside. A lot of it's not very attractive scrubland, often semi-derelict on the edge of housing estates. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense for it to be preserved. So sort of one-size-fits-all policy about the Greenbelt really is doing a lot of damage to the supply of housing.
Yeah, London is interesting, isn't it? I mean, London's always had this sort of very stark contrast between the very rich and the very poor. I mean, I remember reading, you know, how in our great days of empire, you know, that London was full of the most incredibly aristocratic rich families and company headquarters and so on. And at the same time, massive slums, you know, slums which actually were still around in London when I was growing up in the 1950s, you know. It's always been this sort of city of contrast. Can you tell me what is a difference between the situation, the historical situation, and the situation today?
Well, I think in many ways there's a similarity, and obviously there are always these problems in any big city, but in some ways, London's fairly unique, though. It's similar to places like New York in the sense it's one of the key global financial centres, and that brings with it particular extremes of wealth because you do have this concentration of super rich people, and in turn they demand particular types of services that are often provided by relatively low wage labour. So yeah, it does create this polarisation.
Yeah, but it's not only the low wage labour sector of the population, or that's serious enough, that's being forced out. Is, as you said in the beginning of the programme, it's sort of the middle section. It's people like teachers, isn't it? You know, people who put out your fires if your house catches fire. You know, it's people who look after the city's infrastructure. Those are the people who are being threatened as well. And not just threatened, but they are actually moving out or have already moved out.
That's right. It's often those people who frequently have to make very long commutes into London to work there, but don't actually live in London.
Yeah.
Which in turn, you know, those are often, you know, there's people with stable jobs and who stabilise the communities as well. So you do get, unfortunately, a rapidly shifting population without any sort of proper sense of community in sort of London areas. And that in turn creates a sense of anonymity that breeds crime and antisocial behaviour. So there are a whole host of problems where, you know, these are typical of many big cities, of course.
Yeah, so it's sort of breakup of traditional communities. You mentioned the East End, the Cockney community. But I mean, London's made up of many different communities, isn't it? I was brought up in South West London, definitely there was a central community there, and there is in North London, there is in West and East, and everywhere. You know, it's just these communities have been broken up. I guess the most important difference for somebody like me who visits London regularly, but I don't live there, is that I no longer know people there. You know, they've all gone somewhere.
Yeah.
And I don't feel at home there, really, in a way that I used to, perhaps because I don't live there. Okay, of course it doesn't feel at home there, but that basic sort of sense of community of knowing people in my local area is gone. At the local pub, you know, there's new people there who I don't know anymore.
Well, a lot of the pubs have closed down, of course, in London.
Yeah.
And that's partly to do with the high taxes on drinking and the smoking ban, but it's also due to demographic changes, so the rising Muslim population and a lot of other migrant groups like Christian Africans don't really have a tradition of going to pubs and drinking quite so much. So
These
demographic changes do have an impact, but also the rise in the rental sector and the fall in home ownership, going back to some of these problems with the housing market, these government interventions that have pushed up the cost of housing. I mean, that has an impact as well, because obviously with a rental sector, you do get people moving in and out of houses and they don't put down the same roots in an area that someone who bought a property would.
Right. Okay, let's continue this very interesting conversation after a short break.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World programme. Today I'm discussing London with Dr. Richard Wellings, a Deputy Research Director of the Institute of Economic Affairs, which is based in London. Now, Richard, another aspect to this whole thing is the political side of it. You know, the Labour government, which could well come to power, you know, in a few years' time, or even before then, Now, it has a very strong base in London, doesn't it? Surprisingly, perhaps, to some people, well, to Conservatives. Now, how is this demographic shift altering the political landscape of London?
Well, that's an important point, because we see the changing demographics with a rising share of London's population being from black and minority ethnic groups. And of course, these groups tend overwhelmingly to vote for the Labour Party in elections. And it's becoming increasingly difficult for the Conservative parties to control London. And they're gradually being pushed to the outer suburbs, are changing to Labour as well. This is a massive change. And because of the shifting population, it's likely to carry on for decades to come.
Mm. So in a way, then, the lack of stability and the breakup of traditional communities and I suppose the undermining of the traditional middle class in London equates to a growth in the Labour vote. Or would that be an oversimplification?
That's right, but often you find in some of these groups as well, they're heavily dependent on the public sector. Either they work for the public sector or there's welfare benefits and social housing. So in a sense, they're inevitably going to be more prone towards supporting the Labour Party than the Tories. But this is a huge problem for the Conservatives. I mean, what do they do? Do they sort of try and move towards the left, but then risk alienating their core vote in the Shires? It's a very difficult dilemma.
Because to move to the left would mean what? It would mean releasing some land around the city edges, which would allow developers to move in and would eventually result in lower price houses. But in a previous discussion on this theme, you mentioned the fact that the British economy is, to a certain extent, dependent on the huge turnover of vast amounts of capital, which is tied up with the housing market. And therefore, the Conservatives really would be shooting themselves in the foot, wouldn't they, if they allow investment into private property, both be it residential or commercial, to sink?
Well, I mean, in the long run, it would benefit the economy because you would get higher productivity. For example, more skilled labour could move to London from less productive parts of the country. But in the short term, you're right, if there's a sudden increase in supply, it could potentially destabilise the financial system. But, the bigger problem for the Conservatives is the so-called NIMBYs, the Not In My Backyard Brigade, who dominate the areas just around London. And they're really anti any new housing in their areas because, of course, it devalues or risk devaluing existing properties. So you don't get the scarcity value of, you know, these nice exclusive villages, maybe 10 or 20 miles outside London. And they don't particularly like outsiders to move in and change the environment there.
No, right. But you're talking about the Conservative Party just then. I can't help thinking that the criticism which is often levied at the Conservative Party, that it's not really a Conservative Party. It's not a party that's interested in the long-term future and long-term growth. It's more and more a party which is interested only in the next election and the short-term survival, and almost in a populist way, you know, selling ideas so they make sure they get enough votes to keep themselves in power.
No, I think that's fair comment, and there's definitely been a change from the Thatcher era when, of course, the Conservatives were deeply ideologically driven till today, or even since David Cameron, when it's been much more pragmatic, and really the majority of Tory MPs you could probably describe as Blairites who don't really believe in conservatism, and they certainly don't believe in free markets either.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, isn't it? Because in some ways you can see that the Conservatives actually could benefit London a lot. But they are, in a way, it seems to me, you know, giving carte blanche to the Labour Party to win, to win not only the local elections, but to gather steam and momentum for the next general election. And the playing field, of course, is London. It's not Scotland, it's not the North of England, they're important, but the major playing field seems to me is London.
But it's difficult to see what they can do in terms of strategy, given this massive demographic shift, unless somehow they can find a way of appealing to the ethnic minorities. I mean, that may be possible with, for example, the Indian population, which is culturally quite conservative. But there hasn't been much evidence of a shift so far. I mean, there are some groups like Sikhs that tend not to vote for the Labour Party overwhelmingly, but they're quite a small proportion of the population.
Mm. Do you like living in London, Richard?
Well, I do enjoy it. I enjoy the sort of freedom you have here and all the opportunities for events and culture and so on. But at the same time, the hassles do get me down, the long commutes, all the congestion, it's a nightmare to drive anywhere. So I think as long as you can get out of the city quite regularly, say at least once a month, then it's tolerable.
Yeah, I mean, I meet all sorts of people, you know, living up in Scotland and all the places who run away from London. I can't help thinking they harbour somewhere deep in their souls a lurking desire to return. But I mean, I'm a Londoner, and I mean, my question to you is, London still a great city? Is it still a sort of fantastic place? Because I wonder, judging by people's comments who've left there, and I mean, it used to be that, you know, if you were young, you went to London to make it first, and if you can make it in London, then you can make it anywhere. But now people can't even get into London. You know, they can't afford to rent a little room somewhere in a house even. You know, that's going to be £800 a month.
They can, but unfortunately it means making big sacrifices. So if you do want to rent a cheap room in London, it's not going to be in the nicest of areas.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to put up with a lot of antisocial behaviour. Yeah. You might be looking at a fairly long commute, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes into the centre. So it can be done, which is shown by for example, some of the Central Europeans who've moved here, they do it by moving to unfashionable areas, typically, and sharing five or six people to a house. But obviously, if you then have children and try and want to bring up a family, that's a very different proposition.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm glad that London's it's still okay then, what you're saying, isn't it? We still have hope as Londoners.
There are still big plus points from London, but obviously a lot of downsides too, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much indeed, Dr. Richard Wellings, the Deputy Research Director of the Institute of Economic Affairs in London, who's told us that all is not lost in London. But we do have a problem, a real demographic problem, and it's happening right now. It's making life much more difficult than it used to be. London is not the place it used to be. It's still great, but it's not quite the same as it was. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, listeners, for being with us today. Goodbye.